translation. What is the value of a prolonged life which is wasted, inexperienced by years in this world? Better a moment of full consciousness, because that gives one a start in searching after his supreme interests. Purport by Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Srila Sukadeva Goswami instructed Maharaj Parikshit about the importance of chanting the holy name of the Lord by every progressive gentleman. And that was, of course, Srimad Bhagavatam 2.1.11, the previous verse. And he said, O King, constant chanting of the holy name of the Lord after the ways of the great authorities is the doubtless and fearless way of success for all, including those who are free from all material desires, those who are desirous of all material enjoyment, and also those who are self-satisfied by dint of transcendental knowledge. So, of course, that verse was so close. And I guess the speaker yesterday pointed this out. Akama, Sarvakama, Moksha Kama, Udharati. But very important concept, that somebody who can approach Krishna to satisfy his material desires and do it according to the rules and regulations given by the great authorities, you know, then he doesn't have any doubt and fear that he's going to get liberation from his problems, and he's going to be able to reawaken his actual service. You know. And so we're reading the speeches of Maharaj Prithu now, and the instructions of Kumaras, and in our Bhakti Bhai Baba program, and probably this fantastic purport about how talking about how we have these desires, material desires, and he says, practically speaking, even for a pure devotee, as long as we have these material body, we're still going to have these desires to deal with, you know, so on. And the thing is just not to satisfy them in the mode of ignorance. You can satisfy them by in the mode of passion, but then you just keep a little handle on Krishna while you're doing it, you know, and then it'll be progressive like that, so on. So Prabhupada gives us such a nice program of offering everything to the deity. Offer your clothes to the deity before you take them. This is for your service, this is my uniform as your servant. Then offer things you want to eat to Krishna and follow the process. And then we can gratify our senses, become peaceful, and understand who we are and make more progress than on this Gyan level. So, Prabhupada says, Sukadeva Goswami instructed Maharaj Parikshit about this for every progressive gentleman in order to encourage the king who had only seven remaining days of life. Srila Sukadeva Goswami asserted that there is no use in living hundreds of years without any knowledge of the problems of life. Better to live for a moment with full consciousness of the supreme interest to be fulfilled. So in our service we may become so confused, and we're caught up in our making money and, you know, and gratifying our mind and this and that, and we remember, oh my God, I want to serve Krishna. But then we lament because I haven't been serving Krishna for the last 3 hours, you know, or 2 hours, after 1 hour I wasted my time in some stupid thing. And so then we waste that time by lamenting. Okay, a moment's lamentation and whatever is good to get purify us, but then right away we should, as long as we are remembering Krishna, we should go ahead and do something. And even if we just remember Krishna for 2 or 3 minutes and fall in Maya for another hour, okay, but it was better that 1 minute we actually did something for Krishna. Yeah. Then down where I made this note that in the translation, in the actual Sanskrit, is the word viditam, which is translated as consciousness, full consciousness. But if you look at the rest of the Veda base, it comes back as knowledge, you know, full knowledge of Krishna. Consciousness is more like on the level of buddhi, like that. But at this point, it means it's also probably translating as consciousness. Yam yam bhapi smaram bhavan. But it means to know Krishna, you know, who we are, what is our service, like that. And that And not just some kind of strange consciousness of the deities look pretty. How pretty are the deities? But we actually have to have this knowledge that I am servant of Krishna. You know? And I'm looking at how pretty Krishna is to get some motivation to serve him properly and to pacify my senses so I can serve him properly. Another word here is it also this word muhurta. There Prabhupada's translating it as a moment, but of course the Veda base usually, and Prabhupada usually translated as, you know, like 48 minutes, like that, so on. So Sukadeva Goswami is saying, maybe he's saying, you know what, you got to have at least 48 minutes of knowledge of Krishna to make any progress. I don't know about that. But yeah, at least maybe, okay, oh, I remembered Krishna for one moment today, Prabhu. Okay, it's useful, but if you can actually have a full Mangal Artik, you know, of remembering Krishna, and have a full 2 hours of japa remembering Krishna, you know, yeah, then maybe practically speaking, you're going to make some practical progress. Otherwise, Prabhupada talks about sometimes about, oh yeah, he'll make progress, but it will take thousands of lifetimes, you know. So muhurta means, you know, hey, let's have some substantial remembrance of Krishna, like, you know, again, like good Mangala Arati, Kirtan, understanding what the Gurvastika prayers mean, focusing on them, focusing on our japa, not answering the telephone while we're doing japa, at least the 16 rounds. And there's something else, you know, more stuff in as we got our service, from chanting we got our service. Okay, now do it also, you know, with the consciousness of trying to do it to please Krishna. Then we go ahead, and the purport says, the supreme interest of life is eternal, with full knowledge and bliss. Yeah. So it says that one can obtain the supreme goal in life here, whatever that is, and now it's defining what it is. And we put a little picture of Krishna playing with his friends in the forrest, like that. And this is Nitya Lila. You know? So what we're trying to do is just get back to our service position, you know, whatever our service is, and be fixed in that. You know? And of course this means, you know, we have full knowledge, you know, like that. Because here is so much service, there's so much doubt about, is this actually pleasing to Krishna? Am I doing the right thing? You know, so many things come up this way and that way. You know, like I just got exactly when we're supposed to go online here, they call from Mexico. And the $1,000 I was supposed to send for Mother Jambavati's tooth surgery, instead of sending it to Cruz Santa Manuel Ramirez, I sent it to Cruz Santa Maria. What is Ramirez? And now my mind is just panicking about, what am I going to do? How can I get this taken care of? But when we're in full knowledge, we're not caught so much maybe in these dichotomies of a material confusion like that. You know, even when Mother Yashoda is being confronted with the idea of giving her breast milk to Krishna or giving the milk from the pot to Krishna, you know, it's not like frustrating. You know, there the knowledge is enthusing her. It's enthusing her to think about serving Krishna more. So this is the goal of life, to get, you know, back in Nitya Lila. And then, like Prabhupada says, everything will be, all the knowledge will be wonderful. All the challenges and obstacles will be actually be nice. But here, even in devotional service, because I'm in anxiety, I kind of think it's my money. So I think, my goodness, I wasted my money. Or how am I going to get my money back? Or the devotees will be angry at me for being a fool. You know? Or else I'll have more anxiety about doing this service properly, you know. So the goal is to hear about Krishna and to get back to the full devotional service with full knowledge and full bliss. Bliss for Krishna. On the other hand, Prabhupada says, those who are bewildered by the external features of the material world are engaged in the animal propensities of eat, drink, and be merry. Type of life are simply wasting their lives by the unseen passing away of valuable years. Yeah. So Upadeshamrita, Prabhupada says that some person is attached to eating crab, meat, eggs, or other things produced by semina and consumed in the form of flesh and blood. But other people are attached to eating fruits, roots, leaves, milk, or foods in the mode of goodness. Yeah. But he said this is all Maya. Yeah. So same way, you know, I don't know about you all, but I still like to offer things that I want to eat. I think about offering things to my deities in terms of what I want to eat. But I'm Majjhimadhikari. I'm coming to the point, thinking I shouldn't think that. Okay. Yeah. And then actually making some, psychological adjustment here. Let me close Skype. Yeah. Okay, I quit Skype and maybe got a little more bandwidth now. So I think myself and maybe some of you also, this thing, we're on this level where we're still thinking about eating, drinking, and being merry in devotional service. You know? And so we have to get, free from that. You know? And otherwise we're wasting our lives by the unseen passing away of valuable years like that. Yeah. Then Prabhupada says, we should know in perfect consciousness that human life is bestowed upon the conditioned soul to achieve spiritual success. My goodness, Prabhupada says we should know in perfect consciousness. So, even though this is the second canto, we've already had such a high standard. Oh, I know, Prabhu. I know I'm not the body, Prabhu. I know I should serve Krishna, Prabhu. When's prasad, Prabhu? Are we going to go to the kirtan? Who's giving a lecture? Well, I don't like his classes. They're boring. Yeah. So, in perfect consciousness, human life is bestowed upon the conditioned soul to achieve spiritual success. And the easiest possible procedure to attain this end is to chant the holy name of the Lord. Jai, Hari Bol, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And we have a picture here of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati and the Gaudiya Math. Looks like they're leaving for a kirtan. And why do I say that? It could also be a picture of them coming back for a kirtan. But they don't look like they've worked up much of a sweat in the picture. Looks like maybe they're getting ready to go. And one thing is they have a lot of flags, and I keep preaching about this all over the world, that my experience, when you go out chanting the holy names, the people see it from a distance, and usually what they hear is the crashing of the kartals and maybe the drums. They don't hear the holy names. Then they see this group of people walking down and maybe saying something, and they think maybe it's some kind of political protest, movement about the war in Syria or something, But if you have flags, then it looks like something pleasant, Not like kill the enemies of Islam or something, but just some colorful flags, and they think, oh, it's something colorful, it's something nice. And then, of course, the voice, the kirtan, should be louder than the instruments. It's an interesting picture because this little boy next to Bhakti Siddhanta looks like he has a flag too. Everybody can participate. Yeah. So chanting ourselves and then chanting together, and then the books are just to inspire people also to chant. And in some ways it's such an easy process. Myself, I know I'm so attached to different kinds of subtle gratification. But every morning we have this Japa Joe symposium from 1:30 in the morning till 3:30, and we get about 7 to 15 people. It's on start meeting also, and it just pulls me out. Okay, I don't want to get up. I got to get up, so I get up and I chant my half hour, then somebody else chants, and we exchange a few things on the chat and some pictures, and it's pretty good, really get pretty good concentration. So by 3:30 you got 16 solid rounds done. then after that it makes it so much easier to, you know, to figure out, you know, how much to let your body and mind relax and do what they want to do and do a service you do want to do. Because with that perspective and that basis, it's just so easy then to execute pretty good service, you know, pretty good service like that, and to work on improving it. So otherwise, Mars Prithu had to, you know, eat the trunks of trees and, you know, and sleep on the cold ground and all these incredible austerities. You know. But now just by doing this, chanting with attention, trying to chant with perfect consciousness, you know, for 2 hours, then everything else becomes very natural. We can see it's natural, like that. And the easiest possible procedure to attain this end is to chant the holy name of the Lord. In the previous verse, we have discussed this point to a certain extent, and we may further be enlightened on the different types of offenses committed unto the holy name. Srila Jiva Goswami Prabhu has quoted many passages from authentic scriptures and has ably supported the statements of the matter of offenses at the feet of the holy name. So it's nice, no? Holy name is a person, like that. And he's so merciful, Nam Prabhu, you know, so merciful, like that. But we can commit offenses, of course, and this minimizes the potency, like that. Yeah. We have these compared to, like, bad dogs. As I've heard, Prabhupada said, dog is number one offender. He even urinates on tulsi plant, like that. So, bad future for brother dog. So then Prabhupada goes into the first, second, I think seventh offense. It's interesting because in the Upadeshamrita, I think the only offense that Prabhupada brings into there is the seventh offense, like that, you know. So out of all these offenses, Prabhupada even says that this is the seventh offense is the worst. But starting off in the beginning, Prabhupada says, from the Vishnu Yamala Tantra, Srila Jiva Goswami has proven that one can be liberated from the effects of all sins simply by chanting the holy name of the Lord. My goodness, you know. And so we looked up on the internet Vishnu Yamala Tantra, and going here and there, and we found nothing on Wikipedia, but we found something on some Swami had a nice description of the Vedic literatures, and it seemed pretty good. I think he was at Advaita, but he seemed like he wasn't a really bad guy, you know, so it seemed like a pretty decent description of actual technical things. And there's the Vedas, okay, and the Puranas, and then the Tantras. And Tantra generally means how to do something. It means technique, like that. You know? And so people who are just concerned with the technique and doing it properly, you might say that they are tantrics. Tantrics, you know. And for example, like usually we talk about tantricism, Prabhupada talks about tantric misdeeds, and it's associated with these horrible, you know, things of drinking wine and having ritual sex and all these kind of things. And so these people don't really examine what is the result of their activity. You know, they're just concerned with being able to do it, you know, and something like that. And so that's the position of most of these tantrics. But we also have our tantras. You know, there, as far as I understand, there are 108, you know, Vaishnava tantras, amongst which the Narada Pancharatra is the most prominent, and we follow like that. And these give you technique on how to do things. Put on tulsi beads, make a deity like this, worship the form like this, get up at this time, you know. So the tantras are a separate body of literature, and it talked a little bit about the Vishnu Yamala, but the question in my mind is that why, you know, Jiva Goswami is quoting it, and why Prabhupada is quoting it, you know. And it seems that maybe just to establish, you know, that amongst these kind of people, Because it goes on, and the next thing that Jiva Goswami quotes is the Markandeya Purana. Quoting from the Markandeya Purana, Sri Jiva Goswami Ji says that one should neither blaspheme the devotee of the Lord, nor indulge in hearing others who are engaged in belittling a devotee of the Lord. So Markandeya Purana is in the Wikipedia, which is not always all that accurate, but you know, usually a good source. And there it says that it's one of the 18 major Puranas, but it says that the Padma Purana says that it's a Rajarshik Purana, it's in the mode of passion. So here, this is kind of an interesting, more depth thing, why Jiva Goswami is quoting from the Vishnu Yama and the Markandeya Purana, like that. One is like, you know, more like amongst the tantric type literatures, and the other is in the mode of passion. And so maybe the thing that comes to my mind is maybe somebody else has some more information. Maybe Vishnu Chakravarti talks about this. But it seems that maybe because these citations are to show to people who don't believe in the potency of the Holy Name, that even amongst their own scriptures, you know, this potency is there. Like that. One devotee was preaching in these yoga ashrams, and they follow Patanjali. And Patanjali says, do this, don't do that. Do this, don't do that. Yama niyama, nama, yama niyama. But then he says, Ishvara Pratipat. He says, but if you worship Ishvara, you can ignore all these things. But they kind of pass over that, you know. Okay, so even if you're followers of the tantras and you're trying to keep from getting simple reactions for your illicit activities, or you want to get things and therefore you're engaged in following the Markandeya Purana, in every case, it's pointing out the importance of chanting the holy names. You know? But you know, one has to avoid, you know, being blasphemous to devotees, you know, which people do this. They engage in, oh, God doesn't matter, I'm chanting his holy names. And they're doing all kinds of bad things to devotees. A devotee should try to restrict the vilifier by cutting out his tongue. And being unable to do so, one should commit suicide rather than hear the blaspheming of the devotee of the Lord. And so I found some pictures here of Islamic devotees with their signs. One sign says, butcher those who mock Islam. The other is, behead those who insult Islam. So I guess we can make up the same signs to say, butcher those who mock ISKCON. Behead those who insult ISKCON. And these guys are totally covered over. Their faces are covered over. They're not like, you know, they're doing this from a hidden rat-like consciousness. So I think it's a very important point. I'm sure our detractors would love verses like this to discuss it, and maybe people want to discuss it more. But Alba says that that you know, a kshatriya can chastise people, and maybe he's going to cut the tongues out. But after that, I think it says that he should commit suicide, a kshatriya, which is a real waste of a good kshatriya, you know. And then also Prabhupada says a brahmana can't commit suicide because you'd be killing a brahmana by doing it. You know? And then also the extended idea is that actually one should be expert enough to defeat people by proper logic and argument and quoting from authoritative sources like that. So we should be qualified to do this. You know? And if we're like not properly trained, or we're too lazy to have trained ourselves, you know, or idiots, you know, then we can then just leave the situation, cover our ears and leave the situation, but don't stay. When what was his name? Something Khan, Ramachandra Khan, I think it was his name. He was blaspheming Haridas Thakur, had the prostitute try to seduce him, and then Lord Nityananda also visited his place, and he also insulted Nityananda. So Nityananda went away in anger. Then after that, because Ramachandra Khan was keeping too much of the tax money for himself, the Muslim magistrate came and captured him and his entire family. And the place where he insulted Nityananda, he cooked a cow and he plundered the entire village for several days, till not even a dog stayed there. It's like that. So then in the purport it says that in that place, maybe it was a text, in that place where a great pure devotee is blasphemed, that the person who does it, his family, and even all the people in the neighborhood all suffer. So it's quite serious, you know. Of course, maybe it depends on the consciousness of the person. If he's actually doing it with full consciousness, it's worse. If it's actually an elevated devotee, who's obvious elevated devotee, it's worse. Yeah. But the reaction goes a long way. So the thing is not only like, I won't hear this, but, you know, I've got to get out of town. This is going to have a reaction not only for, you know, just for people who are hearing it, but also people who live in the neighborhood. You know, even associate with such a guy who could do such a thing like that. You know? So it's kind of my intelligence on the matter, that at least we should get out of the area and not associate with the person and people who do, you know, allow this kind of thing to happen. Other hand, we should be intelligent enough to be able to defeat it verbally and that kind of stuff. And the other more extreme things of committing suicide or cutting people's tongues out, you know, that sounds more like in the Sakya Yuga type atmosphere. You know, if somebody was a serial killer, then very much he might be, you know, killed, you know, by the government, by the state, even in our simple environment. So in the Sakya Yuga, if somebody says blasphemy, it's so offensive and so obviously horrible, you know, that then in those cases, yeah, you know, cutting his tongue out or killing him, this is the same as dealing with somebody who's like murdering people, you know, mercilessly, you know, consciously, to enjoy himself. The conclusion is that one should neither hear nor allow the vilification of a devotee of the Lord, like that. You know? So, Lord Chaitanya was listening to Sarvabhauma preaching Mayavad philosophy, which is actually cutting the hands and legs off of Krishna. You know, it's insulting the Vedanta Sutra, but he didn't say anything for 7 days. So here's another point: he didn't approve, but he listened. So sometimes there's a possibility of other citations also, that we can tolerate these things because we know that we're going to be able to correct the person like that. You know? So sometimes you may see an advanced devotee doesn't take immediate action because he knows he's going to be able to, you know, by tolerating it, the offenses, you know, correct it properly and get a better result. Then Prabhupada starts to talk about the second offense. As far as distinguishing the Lord's holy name from the names of the demigods, the revealed scriptures disclosed by Bhagavad Gita 4:10:41. Of course, that's the end of the chapter on pantheism. What is that? Vibhuti-mat sattva. Among fish, I am the shark. Among animals, I am the lion. So in 10:41, something there, Krishna is saying that what's the use of describing all these different things, you know? Yeah. And all the different demigods as different Shakti-Avesh avatars. You know? Should understand that just by myself, I maintain the whole universe. You know? So Prabhupada says, the revealed scriptures disclose that extraordinarily powerful beings are but parts and parcels of the supreme energetic Lord Krishna. How's it go? Ekanksena, Anksa. Eka Anksena, Stito Jagat. Except for the Lord Himself, everyone is subordinate, and no one is independent of the Lord. No one is independent of the Lord. Since no one is more powerful than or equal to the energy of the Supreme Lord, no one's name can be as powerful as that of the Lord. The chanting of the Lord's holy name, by chanting of the Lord's holy name, one can derive all the stipulated energy synchronized from all sources. Yeah. So that was a very interesting phrase for us. By chanting the Lord's holy name, one can derive all the stipulated energy synchronized from all sources. So it reminds us of the fundamental glorification of the holy names, Chaito Darpanam Arjanam, a very good verse for meditation, contemplation, because it really describes the glories of the Lord's holy name in such a nice way. Cheto darpana marjanam. First it purifies the heart of the simple reactions. Bhava maha devagni nirvapanam. And that then relieves us from suffering, from pain. Shreya kairava chandrika vitarinam. That chanting is the waxing moon that spreads the white lotus of good fortune for all living beings. So this matches the description of the development of devotional service given by Rupa Goswami in Nectar of Devotion, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. The first effect is that it frees one from suffering. And of course that means, as Prabhupada explains, that one gets free from the sinful reactions. So this verse is paralleling that description of development. Then after that, the second result, Nectar of Devotion says, after getting free from suffering, is that things actually become auspicious. So same thing, Shreya Kairava Chandrika Vitaranam. Not only I don't have to suffer, for my work and my activities, but now my work actually becomes auspicious. I get a good job, which is doing something nice for society and which is creates a nice Krishna conscious atmosphere where I can even talk about philosophy with my co-workers and some of our clients, And instead of just fighting with my family all the time, now actually my family relations actually become auspicious and pleasant, So I following the whole thing through, Shreya Kairava Chandrika Vitaranam Vijavadu Jivanam, then actually we get knowledge. So it seems that it actually, those glorification of the holy name in that verse is actually progressive, And it goes on to the higher levels of we become merged in the ocean of bliss, and then it expands it everywhere else to other people also, So that's one kind of speculation about that verse. But at least at this level, what happens is everything becomes all the different energies in the world, income with money, family life, prestige, knowledge, they all become synchronized by chanting. And then we can get all this benefit in one place, one time. But the chanting makes everything auspicious. It synchronizes our relationship with these subtle, astrological forces that really matter. Health. Then Prabhupada goes on with the second offense. Therefore, one should not equalize the holy name of the Lord with any other name, Brahma, Shiva, or any other powerful god, can never be equal to the Supreme Lord Vishnu. The powerful holy name of the Lord can certainly deliver one from sinful effects. The powerful holy name of the Lord can certainly deliver one from sinful effects. But one utilizes this transcendental potency. Okay. It's a fire truck. They're just around the corner. But one who desires to utilize this transcendental potency of the holy name of the Lord in one's simple activities is the most degraded person in the world. That's pretty, It's the most merciful thing, the holy name. And then we're using it to justify our sinful activities. Fornication, gluttony, avarice, cruelty to others. In the name of Allah, I will hurt all these people. In the name of Christ, I will conquer these people. And so many things like that, bigger or grosser. So this is the seventh offense. And again, and several times I've seen when Upadeshamrita Prabhupada said this is the greatest offense against the holy name. And of course I do it, and maybe other people also. I try and chant and nullify the reactions to my selfish activities, my greedy activities, like that. Eating too much or this or that. But then, like Maharaj Pariksit, we can pray that, okay, the holy names don't nullify all the reaction. Let me experience some of the stupidity from eating too many pakoras at 9 o'clock at night. so on. Yeah, and then I'll know better next time. My body and mind will know better. I'm so stupid. I got to learn the hard way. So, dear holy names, you know, don't make it so crazy. I become and I lose my Krishna consciousness. But let me experience some of the stupidity, you know, like that. Such persons are never excused by the Lord or by any agent of the Lord. One should therefore utilize one's life in glorifying the Lord by all means, without any offense. Yeah. So we should chant purely. We should distribute books, not because of the money we're getting. You know, we should do preaching and establish programs in schools and universities, not because we'll get prestige, comfortable life, you know. But we, by all means, everybody has different means, ability. In the picture, we have a picture of the Ras Lila they established in Manipur. They're natural dancers and musicians, so they've used that means to glorify Krishna by this unbelievable Ras Lila. And then there's a picture of Govindaji, who's a whole self-manifesting deity in Manipur. So we all have our own means, you know. You can tell we're on a major street here. I look out across, and it's the backside of a big, big strip mall, you know. But the street in front of us, there's four lanes of traffic, two one way, two the other. And we get it. I see a fair amount of people walking by. And I started to notice that actually a lot of them are actually like, you know, young intelligent people or like older type people who are doing some austerities with biking. And so it seems out of our city of Murfreesboro, we actually got a pretty good, especially in the earlier hours, pretty good, you know, sample of the nice people, you know, passing by here. So I was thinking if we just had like a little newsstand type thing, you know, free take one, some kind of well thought out name, that these people would take it. And so they're looking. So many people are looking, especially nice people. And so there's one way of glorifying Krishna, but it has to be done without any desire, you know, for personal profit and that kind of stuff. Such activity of life, even for a moment, is never to be compared to a prolonged life of ignorance, like the lives of the tree and other living entities who may live for thousands of years without prosecuting spiritual advancement. So here we looked up the lives of the tree. And Hyperion is the name of a California coast redwood, yeah, in Northern California, that is measured at 379.3 feet tall, which ranks it as the world's tallest known living tree. Okay, and if you look at these skyscrapers, they're about 16 feet per floor, so divided into 380, that comes to be a 25 story tall tree. I got a picture here of these coast redwoods and some people walking, you know. And you can see the base of these things are just incredible. You know? Look at the next slide. And here we have a picture of a building which I calculate is about 25 stories tall. And the right side, then we got a picture of some people climbing up one of these trees. I don't know how far they are. They're off the ground. But it's two of these people with their hooks and their belts around the tree. These guys are maybe like, I don't know, like, you know, 18 stories, 20. When I get one story off the ground on a ladder, I get nervous. I start clutching and, you know, one story, you know, falling one story. What to speak of falling five stories, you know. You know? And what to speak of, you know, following, you know, 18 stories or something like that. And you begin to realize how incredible these redwood trees are. Yeah. The tree, Hyperion, the fellow there, he's got a name, is estimated to be roughly 700 to 800 years old. 700 to 800 years old. Of course, the redwoods live to be, you know, thousands of years old. And they got the measure, they could come down, they count the rings, and putting it back to, you know, 2,000 years old, some of them. But this tall fellow is you know, about 700 to 800 years old. And looking back in history, 1347, which would put it like, you know, somewhere around our the age of the tree, that's when the Black Plague was spreading all over Europe. Of course, Christopher Columbus didn't even come to America until it was 1493 or 73 or something like that. And you see, it was spreading all over Europe, and people were dying. There was no method for curing it. It was everything else, you know. So this tree, Mr. Hyperion, was just a little sprout at that time. But he's gone all through all these ages and living and everything else, you know. So just to give some kind of perspective, that he's so great. He's the tallest living entity. He's lived for maybe 700 or 800 years. What has he figured out? Yeah. The only hope is that maybe somebody was cooking some prasadam in the forest, and he was able to smell the prasadam, a tree smell, and he was able to say, "Hey, that smells pretty good," like that, you know. And so, in his next lifetime, when he finally dies, you know, then maybe he can take birth in an ISKCON temple. Let's go ahead. Yeah. So it's kind of a summary of our thoughts on the purport. Fantastic purport. And it's at the beginning of Maharaj Sukadeva Goswami preaching to Maharaj Pariksit. So if we want to become preachers, of course we can see how Sukadeva Goswami preaches. He preaches to somebody who's ready to listen, you know. Maybe the first thing is to get someone in a position where they can listen, where they can appreciate to some degree the importance of this by especially facing their death. Then after that, he starts going about in a very systematic fashion. He starts with appreciating things we all know, pantheism, you know, and talking about that. And then he says that, you know, but ultimately the chanting of the holy names is the best way to remember God at the time of death. And that's the whole purpose of all this. You know? And even if we make a little moment's progress in developing our attachment to the holy names, like that, and our appreciation out of fear, lust, greed, or knowledge, that's the whole benefit, you know. So put everything, I heard Prabhupada said from a good source, you can make plans for serving Krishna, but better just to chant Hare Krishna. Okay, and if you chant Hare Krishna, then the plans will come. You won't be able to stop them, you know, like that. So as much as possible, chanting. If you want to distribute more books, chant. If you want to, you know, make more money for Krishna, chant. On and on. So that's our appreciation for this verse. That's whatever it is. Thank you very much. Agatspa. And our address, jayaram.us. If you want to contact us and see what other things we're doing. So any comments, questions, complaints?
Well, I have I've taken the universal mute off, so if individually anybody wants to make a comment or a question, I wanted to say something real quick, and that was I really like how you explained the portion of the purport when Srila Prabhupada is talking about how by simply chanting the holy name of the Lord, then all of the stipulated energies become synchronized. That was really nice when you pulled out the Shreya Kairava Chandrika Vajaranam. I haven't seen that translation much, but chanting is like the waxing moon that spreads the white lotus of good fortune. It's beautiful, beautiful poetry. It really brings the translation to life.
That's the translation from the Chaitanya Charitamrita.
Oh.
Yeah, the very last chapter of the Chaitanya Charitamrita is the Shikshastika prayers. And then it goes through, like, you know, Lord Chaitanya goes through each section, and then the translations, I guess Prabhupada did them, you know, there, you know. Yeah.
Also in the translation, Srila Prabhupada says, inexperienced years in this world, prolonged life of inexperienced years.
Yeah. It's actually a little different. If you look at the actual word by word, it seems like it's going to come across as a little bit different translation. And as far as I know, Prabhupada made these translations right after he came to the United States, so on. So it's interesting because he had a certain kind of English then. He was using a certain kind of English, which in some ways it was very nice, because he wasn't caught up in our stupid low-class modern diction and grammar, which has become so degraded because of our mechanization. And so it seems like to me like his, at that time, he was still keeping a more kind of poetic, use of the English language. But at the same time, too, I don't think he exactly, there's some words the Prabhupada didn't understand, like he was using a certain way like that, which resulted in some very, funny moments, where Prabhupada used some of these words he didn't quite understand, like that.
Yeah, it's almost like a pun, because you would think that if someone has a prolonged life, they would gain wisdom by experience. But the way he's using this is that such years, even if it's long, is inexperience, because you haven't, for a moment, considered what the Shreya is, the highest good.
Yeah, trees are almost asleep, this thing. Trees are kind of like sleepwalking, I guess, at their best, that level of like sleepwalkers. They can experience smells, they can experience things like that. They experience a dull pain from within. If the neighboring trees start producing a certain fragrance, they'll know that there's danger. It's like hearing somebody scream. Like babies, human beings have a natural fear reaction, a sound that other human beings naturally understand. So trees produce a natural fear or pain smell. And then when they do that, the other trees react by changing their taste, by changing, and that way then these plagues and bacteria that are spreading through the forest, they stop, because the neighboring trees change their chemical composition, and then it stops, it doesn't progress anymore. So there actually is interesting, they're actually awake, it's like, it was a word like sleepwalking type stage, and that's, I don't know, what your consciousness is. I want to sleep and eat for a long time. I want a good sleep. Okay, fella. You got it. 700-year nap.
Does anyone else have anything they'd like to add or ask Maharaj?
Dandavats, Maharaj. It's
Hare Krishna. Yeah.
Hare Krishna. So, I like your the way you connected the part of the first offense, which is interesting. Although the seventh, I've also seen that Prabhupada's calling that the very serious offense of sinful activity on the strength of chanting. But the first offense is the that's the big one, and even though we've seen over the years that the devotees have read stuff like you're supposed to cut out the tongue of the vilifier or commit suicide, even hearing, not even like being the person that's doing it, just hearing it, and it just lends it just the idea of how serious it is. And you did say at the, hold your ears and walk away, and sometimes you have to do that, because some people are too sinful, too envious, or too proud to be corrected. There's no amount of expertise that's going to correct these people. They're just degraded people. But what's the way you linked it up with Nityananda's story with Ramachandra Khan, that was a great story. And not only was he affected, but the whole village. So one could add to that offense that not only should one, take extreme action, at least withdraw at the very least from the association of such famous devotees, whether it's in the name, and you also mentioned on the Islam side, in the name of Allah, or even in the name of Srila Prabhupada, which is compounding the offense. But anyone that's abusing devotees, it's very, very important to distance ourselves from such persons. You know, and we can offer our respects from a distance, but we shouldn't associate or support in any way persons who abuse devotees, especially high devotees. We should withdraw from those persons. And that's also in Prabhupada's purports. There's a striking purport in Chaitanya Charitamrita where he says that the movement's been infiltrated and that these people should be neglected. So it's our duty to become educated. What is a Vaishnava? You know, we should all be familiar with the qualities of a Vaishnava. And, you know, and not to say that everyone's at that stage, but we should be making some effort to become more, purified of these offenses and ultimately become offenseless. That's the whole idea. So if we associate with persons that are in the lower stages or beginning stages that don't understand that, and have no fear or no regard for other devotees, even devotees over their head, then, you know, we should know that association is something like 80% of, you know, that's how powerful association is. So we must, we have to remain sincere to the principle of avoiding Vaishnava Aparad by not only not engaging in it ourselves, not hearing it from others, but we need to try to associate with other sincere devotees that understand that and avoid those that don't. I'm sorry if it went on too long.
No, it's great. One thing, it's kind of subtle point too, is because, you know, in ISKCON, we've had these, like, in our society, we've had these points where people feel that somebody's blaspheming, you know, you're blaspheming Prabhupada, you know, like that, so on, you know, whole societies, you know, against people who are blaspheming Prabhupada. You know. And then my experience, it is common too, is that it's very risky, you know, when you start to use violence against offenders, oof. I mean, verbal violence or we call it like the sanctions, you can't come to the temple, this and that. But when, one time Prabhupada has a letter to Tushta Krishna, sannyasi, and he says, yes, in the beginning force may be necessary, but it has to be applied expertly, or otherwise it can produce a bad taste for everybody. So my experience is that many of these people who were, you know, attacking offenders, you know, there was a strong reaction for them, and it was, and they also went away, you know, so on. So it's a very, very, you got to be very careful, I think. And obviously, in the lesser stage, you know, we should maybe favor the side. We got to protect people, yeah, but just protect them, get them out of there, okay. But in terms of, you know, detailed, you know, stomping out the offenders down to the last thing, maybe better let Krishna do that, and ourselves just get out of the place, and, you know, and let, you know, because maybe we aren't so pure in our things too, and it's very difficult, you know, dealing with devotees unless you're very advanced and very expert.
Right. I was listening to Prabhupada in Australia the other day, and there was a devotee at the end of the class who, you know, was, he didn't say by name who he was talking about, but some Brahmin-initiated devotee, you know, disciple of Prabhupada in Australia, he, you know, something happened where, you know, so maybe it was a temple president or somebody who was a managing position, but he's asking Prabhupada, he says, so should we just give him some menial service until he gets, you know, purified of, you know, the, if, where, you know, you know, he was asking Prabhupada how to deal with that. And Prabhupada was very interesting. It's in this, the Bhagavad Gita CDs, the third CD. I think it's the third or the fourth CD in the ninth chapter of Bhagavad Gita. And Prabhupada told this devotee, it's not for you to judge this person. It's the spiritual master. You know, he will take, you know, the decision. It's not your decision. It's the spiritual, wow. You know, and he was chastising this devotee,
yeah,
who was pretty sure of himself. I mean, something had happened. He didn't get into the details, but he was, you know, he was ready to reprimand somebody, and Prabhupada, yeah, was telling him to back off.
Yeah. I've seen it again several times. One time Prabhupada says, I was irritated with one of my, you know, authorities and things like that. And then I opened Prabhupada's books, you know, for the surefire method, opened Prabhupada's books at random. It was kind of like that. And the purport then said, because different people are in different positions, there are different religious activities for different people. One should not be too critical of other people's religious activities. One should focus on his own religious activities, and otherwise the mind will become restless. So, you know, better to make sure that you're doing things with a good attitude, and like you're saying, that let the spiritual master do it. And I, you know, I'm sure Prabhupada is still watching ISKCON, and maybe from up in the clouds, but, you know, he doesn't like something, he's going to take care of it, you know, like that.
What to speak of Krishna? Krishna is also, he'll accept a direct offense to himself. He'll accept to some, you know, he'll accept offenses to the name. But he doesn't tolerate offenses to devotees.
Yeah.
That he doesn't.
Gaurataya is so merciful, but that's the one thing they won't accept.
You know? But Radharani won't tolerate it, an offense to Krishna.
We're in a lot of trouble here. Maybe only our own few friends. I guess
we're
I should
get
go
busted
though because
one way or the other.
I guess I have to go though because we got the other program. I got to figure out how to get this $1,000 back from Mexico. So
is
so
it a money order?
Have her. Yeah, it's a money gram. Do you know how to do it? I think it's a process, and it takes like about 2 weeks or something. You know. So anyway, but because I did this stupid Maria rather than Manuel, you know, but it's all acceptable. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you, Maharaj, very much. It was a livening class, very purifying. Thank you.
So we'll see you all next week. I'm hopefully before that I can get online and listen to some classes too.
Jai, all glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Jai.
Ramachi,
would you call me?
Of course. Okay, Hare Krishna, Prabhu. Haribol.
Haribol.
Haribol.